1-6-9-10 means we got shots fired. 415 ASF. Route 91, sounded like an automatic firearm.
Okay, code red at 1-6-9-10, we have shots. Okay, what's the name of the police officer?
We have an active shooter. We have an active shooter inside the warehouse.
It's the sound of danger, the sound of unpredictability. It seems to be the soundtrack of the new America. Well, who would have ever thought it would actually come to this? Those sirens could be headed anywhere. No neighborhood, no school, no street corner is immune to the unpredictable actions of domestic terrorism. Deadly actions can spring up anytime, from anyone. A middle-aged man, a teenager, a utility worker, a mom. And last I checked, no human being is bulletproof. Case in point, recent mass shooting left deep scars on the American public. And if you're feeling vulnerable, you're not alone. And you may be thinking about ways you can protect yourself and defend yourself. Maybe you don't want to carry a gun, but have you ever thought about protection technology? Well, on that front, I've got great news. For every victim who goes down in the line of fire, thousands are being saved by new technologies and biometrics, body armor, body-worn cameras, you have crime mapping, less lethal defense, the list goes on and on. And you wouldn't believe the latest protection gear. It's actually amazing. You can shoot at it from close range, you can set it on fire, you can run it over. It takes a licking, keeps on ticking, as that old Timex commercial used to say. And wouldn't it be great if we could get our hands on some of that? Well, more good news. You actually can. You can get the very same gear used on the battlefields and city streets to protect yourself. And also, to prepare if you happen to find yourself in an emergency situation, I'm going to cut to the chase. So you're ready for it? Let's gear up. Let's prepare the smart way. And let's stay ready. Welcome to the battlefield. It's not in some other country. Unfortunately, today's battlefield is right here at home. And for police officers, fighting the bad guys is more dangerous. It's more unpredictable than ever before. The good news is that most threats are stopped long before they actually happen. But occasionally, that bad apple sneaks in under the radar. And when that happens, officers have to be prepared mentally and also physically. Literally, they have to be prepared to be shot at. Could you imagine? But that's where some really cool protective gear comes into play. I'm talking about body plates that can withstand weapons fired at 3,200 feet per second from 100 yards away. I'm talking not only pistol rounds, but NATOs or M80 ball rifle rounds from 50 feet away. Much more firepower than that, actually. So let's find out what kind of technology goes into making this kind of threat protection. A company called Spartan Armor Systems is a ballistic body armor manufacturer and tactical gear supplier that supports law enforcement, military personnel, first responders, and also civilians nationwide. They're right here in my home state, Arizona. So I called up their product expert, Jessica Greathouse. Hi there, Jessica. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Kim.
So as we get started, tell us exactly what your role is at Spartan Armor.
I work for law enforcement, and I'm a dealer relations coordinator.
Now, of course, you supply both law enforcement and military?
We kind of touch base on some military. It's more of actual individuals that are in the military that contact us. Whereas with law enforcement, it's more of the department contacting us and saying, hey, we need a quote for this.
You know, that's fascinating to me.
It's a great growing business.
And this is a life and death thing. I mean, the quality of your body armor can determine whether you live or you die.
Exactly. Body armor is a huge, huge asset to law enforcement departments, and I recommend it for even just standard civilians nowadays with everything that's going on.
Yeah, my heart breaks every day for the kids, parents, police officers. Those communities will never, ever be the same. I mean, Colorado Springs lost 3 officers in just 6 weeks' time. One hero, Deputy Micah Flick, threw himself in front of a close-range line of fire and saved his fellow officers. Do you happen to know what kind of armor those officers might have been wearing?
It must have been a minimum of level 3A protection. Level 3A protection will stop up to a 44 Magnum, and it's pretty standard to a lot of departments out there nowadays that they'll have that level 3A vest, and unless they have like an active shooter vest that they'll keep in the trunk of their car, that they can actually throw over their issued vest that's underneath, you know, concealable vest, that will have like a level 3 to a level 3 plus protection to help stop with the higher velocity ammunition.
And not every police officer has top-notch protective gear. Is it because of the cost? I mean, is it that the department just doesn't want to spend the money, or maybe they just don't have the money?
When it comes to cost, it kind of varies. So like with their steel core armor, it's pretty inexpensive, but if they're looking for something a little bit lighter, that's going to be in like the composite or the composite ceramic realm. And that gets a little bit pricier.
When we were setting up this interview in email, you mentioned something in your email about people donating money for specific things like body armor.
We had worked with Blue Line Armor Ladies. It's basically a nonprofit organization to where they'll have a bunch of people donate, not armor specifically, but they'll donate money to this foundation. And what the foundation does is they'll contact us and they'll be like, hey, so we have this much money donated. How many vests can we purchase with this? And what I had agreed with them is for every 10 vests of armor that they're able to purchase, Spartan Armor was willing to donate one vest.
Yeah, there are actually quite a few armor, I guess you would call them charities. Shield 616 is a really good one because they'll actually replace an officer's donated vest every 5 years. And they also pray for the officers, which you don't see that every day. So yes, these donations are absolutely vital to the force.
It's important. I mean, a lot of departments don't actually have the grants or the funding to purchase armor for all their officers. And for Spartan Armor Systems, we're starting to grow and we're looking out more for law enforcement departments because they protect us. And it's important that they have good, high quality armor in their vest so that they're protected and they can still go out and fight for us.
Absolutely. They put their lives on the line. And one of the most dangerous situations is when they have to approach a suspect in a vehicle. There's the potential for some really close-range combat. So what do you take into consideration when you manufacture that type of protection?
What's very important to us is a common drawback of the steel core body armor is that the projectiles can fragment and ricochet off the face at a 0 to 20 degree angle. And that means that the bullet fragments have the potential to end up in your legs, arms, neck, and your head, which can cause life-threatening injuries. So we came up with this coating called EncapsulOx.
And that is?
It's a proprietary coating. It's a great coating because what actually happens is when the bullet hits the plate, the coating expands out and then it shuts immediately, creating like this really tiny pinhole. And it holds the frags, the shrapnel, and everything like that in between the coating and the plate. So that way, shrapnel and the frags, they don't come out and act harm you or even the law enforcement buddy or partner next to him. It won't hit him. So it's a great extra protection that you can add onto your plate. You can choose to have it, or you can choose to just have a base coat protection, which is just going to be like a corrosion protection, a rust protection of the steel core plate itself. But I highly recommend this full coating. I've shot it personally myself, and it's absolutely amazing what this coating does.
All right, let me get this straight. You shot it yourself, and it just stops the bullet dead in its tracks?
Absolutely, yeah. It literally just enters that coating. It kind of just encapsulates the coating, encapsulates the bullet, and all the shrapnel, and all the frags from the steel core plate itself to protect you.
So let's go to the reverse. What are the risks of having uncoated armor?
There can be a chance that the frags or the shrapnel can hit your carotid artery. Like I said, like arms, neck, your head. It can hit anywhere. You really got to be careful with steel core armor. That's why we created this full frag mitigation coating and capsule lock. That way, you're protected from all that.
You know, as I was looking through your website, you have some really neat stuff there, by the way. I came across something called ballistic steel. This is the same stuff they use to make armored vehicles, bank trucks, guard booths, heavy-duty stuff like that. But now you've put that same material into body armor. I definitely want to know how that works.
So basically, to kind of break it down a little bit, the AR stands for abrasion resistance, and then the 500, the 550, and the 650 stands for the actual Brinell hardness of the steel itself. So the higher the number, the harder it gets. And every single time when I hear a department looking for some armor, I always recommend either the AR-500 or the AR-550. The 550 is some strong, strong steel. It's rated from a 7.62 all the way up to a 5.56. A lot of departments, I'll send out T&E and let them test it. So that way they can see it in action. And it actually can stop a 30-06, which is amazing. The actual Omega is specific for military-grade armor. I know it's heavy, but it's going to save your life.
Okay, there's nothing wrong with a really good leg workout.
Exactly. Exactly. And when you take it off, you might feel like you're floating a little bit.
Now, let's talk specific threats, how you guys combat them with protective gear. For instance, the most common threat for correctional officers is when someone grabs something sharp and goes after them. So, stabbing. I know about the National Institute of Justice and their standards for ballistic body armor, but I couldn't find standards for combination threat vests. First of all, let's backtrack just a second. Explain for everyone exactly what is a combination threat vest.
When you hear combination threat vest, it could be considered stab and slash resistant, but not actually bulletproof. Or it could be bulletproof, but not stab resistant. For instance, we have our level 3A composite hard armor. The hard armor is actually stab proof, as well as slash proof, as well as ballistically rated for pistol rounds, all the way up to a 44 magnum. And then you also have like your 3A soft armor. It's bulletproof, but it won't protect you from those slashes and the stab resistance. So when you think of combination vests, it's going to be like stab resistant as well as slash resistant as well as bulletproof.
Well, that's what I want. Something that just does it all.
Exactly. That's something that everybody needs. You want everything. You want to be protected from everything.
So I'm sure my listeners are curious. How do you and the National Institute of Justice test for all this stuff?
We actually simulate aging and youth when you're actually using it to make sure it holds up in extreme temperatures. Like kind of here in Arizona, it gets really, really hot. Well, if I leave this in my car, is this coating just going to like melt off? Well, no. So we have it tested up to those standards.
So for a vest to get an actual NIJ label, what precisely has to happen?
So there's an NIJ compliance test, which just touches based on primarily the ballistic side of the armor. And then you have your NIJ certification, which touches on the conditioning side of the product and documents the construction of the armor itself. So basically, what specific materials we are using, how they're assembled, all for documentation purposes. I mean, me personally, if I was going to go buy body armor for my husband or my fiance or my boyfriend, and he was in the military or law enforcement, I'd want to make sure that it was tested and up to the NIJ compliance and or the NIJ certification.
Wow, those are some really high standards, and we need that because unfortunately today's battlefield is right here at home. I'm sure law enforcement and first responders are on the edge right now. So let's give them some good news. What kind of cool future technology is in store to protect them even better? You don't have to give away your trade secrets, your proprietary secrets, but just generally speaking, what's the latest and greatest at Spartan?
We have a couple of things coming up because I talk to law enforcement. I hear what they want and what they need. We're actually working on a concealment wraparound vest that's going to wrap around your sides, so kind of like a side panels along with your front and back. But it's also going to have a spot to actually insert our 10x12, 550, our 650, our 500. That way you have that added protection. We're working on a heating and cooling vest. A lot of officers that are wearing this armor every single day, I mean, you have your little spacers that are on your carrier. You have this super nice mesh, but sometimes that just does not cut it.
Well, great, Jessica. You've been a fantastic guest, and thanks for all the great information.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You may notice on this podcast, it's a little bit different. I'm not doing a lot of the talking. My specialty is, of course, digital technology and everything related to that. But the field of protective technology is pretty specific. So I'm leaving it to the experts. Now, there's another side to being well protected, and that's being well prepared for anything. And this is such great stuff. Bulletproof glasses, trauma kits, bug out bags, live shooter bags. I'm not saying that I hope you find yourself in a desperate situation, but it's pretty good to be prepared. And the technology behind all this is so fascinating to me. The folks in Colorado Springs have definitely had their share of fires, floods, and shootings lately. So I called up Don Rogers. He's the host of a radio show called Colorado Emergency Prep Radio. He also owns a fun business called Rocky Mountain Readiness. Hey there, Don. Thanks for taking my call.
Kim, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, let's start at the beginning. What exactly do you do, and why the heck did you get into all this?
We specialize in quality, personal protective, emergency preparedness, and outdoor gear. I've been doing emergency preparedness for about 10 years, teaching, and I was a hazmat guy with the Army. But what really motivated me to start this was the fires that we had in Colorado Springs. We had two major fires. We lost 600 homes. People were killed and lives were disrupted. And as I was teaching it, it seemed like a natural progression.
Now, radio personality to radio personality, tell me a little bit about your show. It's called Colorado Emergency Prep Radio. That's a pretty specific topic.
We started that to help educate the community because we've gone through it. It's one of those things that everybody should always have on their mind, but always need reminding, and that's what really the show is about.
Let's start with protective gear. You sell the same type of gloves and eyewear that armed forces and special elites use. So what should people look for to protect their eyes from these high-velocity objects or mass impacts? Not out of fear or anything, but let's just say that they want the best.
Well, Kim, everybody should be looking for ballistic-rated eyewear. It should be on the APOL, that's the Army Protective Eyewear List, and that validates products to meet ballistic standards for the Army. They should also look for something that exceeds or meets military standard MIL-TRF, that's performance, 32432, and that will be the best eye protection that they can get commercially.
That sounds pretty intense, but how exactly do they test them?
Kim, I've seen them shoot them with buckshot or birdshot. It's pretty extensive, and when they say high velocity, they're talking high velocity. It's interesting to note that the Army requires ballistic eyewear anytime there's a risk of eye injury, and that might not be a bad policy for everybody in the civilian world to look at as well, because your sight's important, your personal protection is important. There's not a big difference in price between high-impact glasses and the ballistic glasses. And they look great, too.
Technology's always changing, and I have to assume that ballistics protection is also improving over time. Give us a little insight into that.
Today, you have the ballistics helmets that will stop pistol rounds and high-velocity shrapnel and that kind of thing. The vest will stop armor-piercing rounds, at 15 feet. The technology has changed incredibly over the time, even when I got out, to today.
All right, let's move away from a protection type scenario to a disaster scenario. What can someone use if they're, say, they're caught in a situation where they have to rescue people or help survivors? I'm not talking about general first aid and Band-Aids here, but something much, much more. Say it's a flood, for example.
Well, in a flood, it's interesting because you're going to stabilize if someone's injured, obviously, you're going to treat those wounds. But there's a big aftermath of in the flood and afterward where water is going to be a big problem, and it always is. Now, you can boil it and you can put chemicals in water if you can make a fire. If you know how much bleach to put in the water, that's okay. But there are a lot of things on the market that will purify water just by dumping it in and running it through the filters. Berkey is a great manufacturer and probably is the standard on that kind of thing. So, yes, it's the aftermath on floods and it's the water purification, because that impacts everybody.
What about a fire? I saw all these different kinds of protective masks on your website. How do they work?
If you live in a forest fire area, during a forest fire, those type of masks do wonders to protect your respiratory tract when you're out and about, because the smoke's everywhere at that point.
Now, I notice you have something called the Live Shooter Pack. That's interesting to me. But what exactly is in a Live Shooter Pack anyway?
What's in that is the kind of basic response. After the person is engaged, what's in the pack is a place to secure the area. You have medical trauma kits in there to treat the wounded. There's portable stretchers to carry folks out. It's generally what you would have to have immediately to secure an area and start treating people before help actually started to arrive.
And you guys carry some pretty big field trauma kits, kits for multiple people, multiple families. I'm talking about churches and businesses. These huge packages just filled with goodies to help people, well, in just about any kind of emergency.
Can we do? And there's some great products on the market that are available to civilians. Just great blood stoppers, Celox comes to mind. And those are things that you can carry in a bag. Everybody has a bag today. One of the most important pieces of gear, though, that I do want to say, no matter what bag you get, and that's a tourniquet. I like the Rat's T. There's a study done for the Boston bomber. You can apply this to the mass murder out in Las Vegas. If civilians carried a tourniquet, or two, a lot of lives will be saved. You just never know when you're going to roll up on an accident. And having a trauma kit in your car with the good blood stoppers and with a tourniquet, we would save a lot of lives.
That's great to know. I mean, there's so much more than just general first aid. I never thought that I should carry around a tourniquet. Good advice. But what about these bug out bags? Fire's coming, hurricane's coming, gotta go. What exactly do we bring?
If you have to evacuate, if you think about Katrina and all these other things, people are on the roads for 12 hours stuck in traffic. There may be no gas. There's certainly no place to buy anything. So what you have with you is what you have. So food, water, some lighting to get you through to your evacuation point. And when you get to the evacuation point, that may not be set up. So you have to rely on what you grabbed for maybe 3 or 4 days. But the best bag is food, water, shelter, port papers, medicine to get you through 72 hours.
There's a lot of technology to help you when you're stranded like that. They make some really cool solar-powered cell phone chargers.
They do. I mean, there are a lot of solar panels. We have some from a couple different companies that work really well, and you can attach them in your backpack. You can just lay them up on the side of your car or your campsite, wherever it is. We like the WeGo. WeGo is great because you can actually jump your car with it.
Okay, now you're talking my language. Let's talk tech. Tell me, right off the top of your head, some of the latest technology-oriented inventions.
Well, you know, Kim, there's a lot of great stuff on the market. We have great solar panel items that can actually be shot and still function. The roll-up kind of panels that work extremely well. Just great stuff. The technology on personal protection has changed considerably since I was in the military. You now can get a panel that's half an inch thick or quarter of an inch thick, and it'll stop 357 rounds at 15 feet. It's just amazing. It weighs less than a pound. So the technology on all this stuff is changing dramatically, and it changes all the time, which is the fun part about the business. And we're able to get those kind of things into the hands of people who want to prepare, or in the hands of police officers and EMTs that are looking for the quality gear to protect their individuals all the time.
Now, of course, when we talk about emergencies, we have communication devices. What about these, Don?
We do have radios. We have satellite radios from INCOM, so you can talk around the world. We have emergency beacons that are great if you're a backcountry camper. If you get hurt, you just push a button and the satellite locates you and automatically transmits your location to emergency services anywhere in the world that you are. Those are cool. I really like those. There's a lot of that available, and a lot of it depends on your personal need and what the situation calls for. So you can attach that to a vehicle or a boat or, again, your backpack and head off anywhere. And if you get in trouble, people are going to be able to find you.
That's definitely something adventure seekers are going to want. Even kids should have one, especially if they go on an overnight camping trip or something like that. I was a den leader for my son's Boy Scouts, and you know the whole drill? You always want to be prepared. Hey, Don, this has been great. If people want to learn more about you, where can they go?
We're on www.rockymountainreadiness.com. We do run a blog off of that. Of course, we're on Facebook and Instagram under Rocky Mountain Readiness. And the radio show, all of it ties in to making the community educated on the need to stay prepared, and not just for an emergency, because you have to prepare long before. So it's all geared toward that. And of course, that all funnels out of the business.
Hey, thanks for being on the podcast, Don.
Kim, I greatly appreciate it. And I hope the listeners got something out of it.
Okay, so we've covered a lot about what's available today to help people stay protected and prepared. But now it's time for my favorite topic. I'm talking about future technology. What an age we live in. What's still in the lab? What's still in the burner? What's still in that think tank? What's waiting for the green light, or maybe federal funding? All that is next. Okay, so now we're going to be talking about my favorite topic. I love future and technology. What's in the lab? What's in the think tank? What will we see in the future? So for this, I went to an expert technology development scientist, a gentleman by the name of Ethan Rudd. His resume is like a novel. I've never seen a more impressive background, but for our purposes, we're just going to say he's an expert. But he's currently a senior data scientist for the Sophos Group. He's collaborated with FacePoint Scientific on issues involving the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Defense. Now, a lot of Ethan's work involves the development of facial recognition algorithms and projects, We're talking about facial anti-spoofing sensor technologies, deep learning environments. This is the stuff of science fiction novels. Ethan is also an invited researcher for Google, where he works with an interdisciplinary team of experts in research, development, and security. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, just to give you an idea. Hey, Ethan, thanks for taking time to join us today.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
There's been some news reports that in China, police officers are wearing special sunglasses where they can spot criminals in a crowd. Now, nobody here in the United States has really reported on whether or not it works, but based on your expertise, do you truly think that facial recognition software can be built into a police officer's helmet or sunglasses or goggles so that they know instantly if they're dealing with a known criminal?
We're still not quite there yet, and a lot of considerations come into play, including how do we properly update the database of known criminals? How do we store that? Where do we store that? As well as power considerations. And also, there are, of course, face recognition algorithmic challenges still. It's gotten a lot better over the years, but if we're dealing with still in the wild, from an egocentric perspective, a bunch of things that might crop up, like masks, occlusions, blur, different lighting considerations, there's still a little bit of work to get there.
Let's say an officer pulls over a vehicle. If you had no rules and an unlimited budget, what would you invent so that the officer could maybe scan the car's contents first and ID the people inside? Ethan, I'm going to ask you to dream just a little bit.
What if you had a drone or some sort of a multispectral imaging component which is able to better detect things in the car that you could just deploy, go do a quick scan of the car, and then via facial recognition just match up the identity of the person driving and then query a database and say, okay, does this person have a criminal record or something to that extent? That could significantly mitigate the risk for the individual officer.
But of course, how would you get around all those privacy issues?
You know, I think that as far as privacy goes, the drone could even be maybe even interactive as far as collecting license and registration. I mean, this is something that one had to display to an officer anyway.
Are there any technologies that, say, cross the line in terms of privacy? I mean, we have it, but it's not being used. Well, it's not being used publicly anyway.
There are other technologies that might be a little bit more intrusive. For example, using a directional microphone to pick up the conversations in the car could be considered a breach of privacy. Or some machine learning-based behavior recognition technology, which is able to try and assess whether the person inside is behaving suspiciously. I think there are a lot of technologies that can be pursued along these lines.
What about technology to create, like, an instant bulletproof shield that police officers could use in a pinch? Anything like that in the works?
There are definitely some advances in material, for example, electrochemically sensitive cloths, etc., that could be deployed quickly if the costs become feasible.
Ethan, those are some astounding ideas. I would love to see police officers outfitted with stuff like that. Let's talk about technology that would help prevent mass shootings in public places because, well, unfortunately, these are happening in the news far too often.
There are a lot of cases where it's very difficult to detect there's anything wrong until it's a bit too late. So the quicker that we can localize and isolate potentially dangerous events and decide to deploy, I think that those technologies are going to be critical. For example, a ShotSpot, which recognizes gunshots and localizes where they are, is a great example of that. And I think that a lot of technologies which monitor, say, security cameras and detect malicious events so that we can deploy as quickly as possible the right response to the threat at hand.
What about using artificial intelligence or patrol robots for crowd control? Could that actually work?
Some of these things have been very useful, but as far as a lot of the patrol duties and keeping the burden on officers to the areas they're actually needed, I think that a lot of that can be taken over by machine. And some of this might be artificial intelligence in the sense of scanning through surveillance feeds and just say there's a situation here, like there's a riot about to break out, like there's some particular incident about to occur, and then deploying the officers to that location respectively.
Since this is your world, Ethan, let me ask you, what breakthroughs are you most excited about? Something tech-wise that, I don't know, would save lives in the short term?
What I'm particularly excited about and what I think could potentially save a lot of lives in car accidents, et cetera, is to have some sort of a technology which
perhaps use brain-computer interfacing, so like EEG, electroencephalography, to be able to monitor the sobriety or maybe even more generally alertness of the person behind the wheel. So, you know, for some people, especially that are just, say, drowsy, if it's able to detect, well, hey, you're a bit drowsy, maybe you shouldn't drive, or maybe you should get a cup of coffee or something, I think that a lot of accidents can be prevented. You know, if we can prevent accidents, I think that's a huge boon to public safety.
I just wish we had more time to talk because, let me tell you, you are so amazing. I would love, love, love to speak with you for hours. I'm sure there are people listening right now that want to know more about you and what you're working on. So how can they find you?
Yeah, people can follow me on Twitter. It's at Ethan M. Rudd.
And let me tell you, Ethan, your list of published works took up at least 3 pages on my laptop. That's a lot of writing.
I definitely publish a good amount of research, and I publish a good number of blog posts for my corporate blog. You know, the more readership of those, I guess the happier I am.
Ethan, I know you said you're a big fan of my show. See, I told you he was smart. And coming from you, that's a real compliment. Thank you so much for all the good info.
Thank you very much, Kim.
So there's good news on the digital law enforcement front. Like, for example, there's this little robot called a Recon Scout Throwbot XT. I didn't make it up. Somebody named it that. Anyway, it can go into these potentially dangerous areas and scope out the scenes. That's not really all that new. You can toss the updated version and it will always land right side up. Now that's something. Or how about this? Google Glass. Not for you, not for me. But if a police officer sees you run a red light, he can take your picture from his glasses. You may think you're getting away, but your photo and license plate are now uploaded to the station and being processed in a jiffy. So don't be surprised if you get a ticket in the mail. And if you do have them in your hometown, like not far from my hometown, there's a place called Paradise Valley. Oh my gosh, it seems like everywhere you go in Paradise Valley, there's some type of cam. So let me tell you what I've done. Every time where I know there's a cam, I just smile at the camera. This way, when the photo comes in, I look good. Let's talk about brain fingerprinting. It's kind of like a lie detector, but much more powerful. It's really controversial. A lot of people are against it, but basically it uses EEG readings to determine if you're storing information in your brain. I know, it's kind of out there. It's pretty interesting. You see, most people want the world to be a safer place. How do we get there is totally up for debate, but that's why I love doing these extended interviews on these Commando On Demand podcasts, because together we're learning more about this digital world and we're navigating the world confidently and we're learning about all this new stuff. I've got a whole university's worth of valuable information for you to download and listen and watch and read right over on my website. Here's the best part. I don't even charge tuition. Think about that. Easy peasy. You could even grab and go a Commando podcast for your morning commute or your drive home. And they're available, of course, on iTunes, Google Play, Google Music, Spotify, you name it, or over on my website, commando.com/podcasts. Thanks for joining me, and thanks for all of our guests on this podcast. Couldn't do it without you. I'm America's digital pro, Kim Commando. And if you like this podcast, go ahead and share it. I'd appreciate that.